back to Sight to the Blind. I really don't have nothing for you this episode because I'm starting my Pesach. So I'm focusing on what I need to do for my Pesach. I enjoyed the first night. Just for when you're following whatever you're following, that the ordinances are still, regardless if you have an apartment, it's regardless if you don't have a fire pit, regardless if you don't have an altar, it's still a progress. It's still an achievement to do all of Scripture. Not to modernize it, not to do it the way you want to do it, but to do all of it as the Israelites did before they left out of Egypt. The thing about the Shabbats, now from Numbers 28, I learned that you offer two lambs. So like I said before, I went to Whole Foods, got two little lamb shoulders, and I burned those on the 14th, which was yesterday, and then I had to burn it again because it's 7 days of ascending smoke offerings. So I burned two shoulders and then burned a whole leg. And I used fir wood. I'm just trying out different woods to see if their smell is different from the other. And they are. It's notable. I was going with the Home Depot flavored wood, which was like mesquite, barbecue, apple, and something. Fruity and apple, I think, was one of them. One of them are. And then I read that in Jubilees, I want to say Jubilees 21. It says not to use dark wood or split wood or woods with knots in them. So then I had to go buy a chainsaw because I don't have a chainsaw. So I bought a chainsaw and I was sawing down like 2x4s, which is still acceptable. I mean, it doesn't have to be literally a whole tree. Like, I think Yah is pretty much merciful and gracious, and knowing that we don't have the abundance of trees that Abraham and the Israelites did in the promised land. So we just make do for what we got. So I tried fir this time. And I just out of curiosity, when I look up resources or I come across resources from the book or the description of the resources in the real biblical lands, I go to that fake land and see if it's actually native in that region. And fir trees aren't native to Israel. It says no true fir trees, genus Abies, are not native to Israel. They are found in nearby regions. They are found in nearby regions like Lebanon, Syria, and Turkey. While the term fir was often used to refer to different coniferous evergreens, such as alipo pines and cypresses. In ancient times, modern species of fir are not found in Israel. So he was in Hebron at the time. So in Jubilees 19, it says, and in the first year of the first week in the 42nd Jubilee, Abraham returned and dwelt opposite of Hebron. That is Kiryat Arba, 2 weeks of years. Kiryat Arba means the city of four giants. Now you're trying to tell me they named a city of that had four giants in that fake land of Palestine? I doubt it. There's no way in the world four giants that it says it consumed or it ate up the inhabitants of the land. There is no way that they would be in a broad desert, no mountains to cover them, and just be out in the open. If I was a giant and I wanted to be around abundance and I wanted to hide in the wilderness knowing that what has happened to my species and my lineage, why would I go to where everybody could see me and where different nations at the time would see me? The Egyptians would be able to see me. The Greeks and Romans would be able to see me. And all of Asia would be able to see me. Why would I open myself out to conflicting nations that wanted to take over land and property? If I was a giant wanting to live in peace and wanted to be left alone, why would I place myself in a kill zone That's like common sense. If you was a giant and you had a ferocious appetite, why would you go in the middle of a desert? Like, you would go to where all the abundance in fruit and food was, which is Africa. So if you come to the abundance of choosing, or you've had the option of choosing multiple woods, just try them all. Because it does say in Jubilees 21, and as regards to the wood of the sacrifices, beware lest you bring other wood for the altar in addition to these: cypress, bay, almond, fir, pine, cedar, savin, fig, olive, myrrh, laurel, and aspalathus. They never heard that word before, or that seen that tree, or even know what it was. I haven't looked that up yet, but I was concentrating on fir. So Abraham was opposite of Hebron, which is, if you go to that fake land, is literally nothing opposite of it. There's a couple of, maybe like one or two mountains in that area, but for the most part, he's not going to travel across the Dead Sea or even opposite. The only thing that's opposite of the Dead Sea is Madaba. He's not going over there. He's not going all the way there for wood. It makes sense for him to be in Africa where he could just walk across to get the wood that he wants. And it says in Jubilees 21, and of these kinds of wood lay upon the altar under the sacrifice, such as have been tested as to their appearance, and do not lay thereon any split or dark wood, but hard and clean, without fault, a sound and new growth, and do not lay thereon old wood, for its fragrance is gone, for there is no longer fragrance in it as before. That is important. Besides these kinds of wood, there is no other that you shall place on the altar, for the fragrance is dispersed, and the smell of its fragrance goes not up to heaven. So what I'm learning is the trees are literally the Most High's Yahuwah incense. So when we chop down trees, when we burn trees for the wood, it's like incense to the Most High. That's why if you type in the phrase in the Sefer, sweet smelling savor, you'd be amazed at how many times it comes up. And it has to do with mostly ascending smoke offerings. So if you sat there and watched the smoke go up, you could just imagine the smoke, even if you don't see it, goes all the way up to heaven. I think the Most High had made this world very, very sensitive and finite to where everything can be smelled or touched in a way that he who created it knows how it can be smelled and touched. So when you salt your oblation, which is what scripture tells you to do in Leviticus 2, and it's also in Jubilees 21. Once you salt your oblation, just imagine when you salt chicken in your stove or in your kitchen, and you that smells good. When you do it to lamb, it smells good. And then you add that with the wood and the nature of it, it would smell good. So the Most High is smelling his works, smelling his creation. And to go further, the Most High created his creation to give off a fragrance. I think we're the only ones that stink. Why is that? Why is when you burn flesh, it stinks? If anybody who has actually been burned before, actually had a scrape or something like that, you smell what your own flesh smells like. You smell that smell. It stinks. But when it comes to animals and their flesh burning, you put a little salt, it smells amazing. And with the wood, depending on what wood you got that has the fragrance, it smells amazing. So it's important to the Most High that we do it right. That's why he didn't want any offerings of lambs, goats, or oxes with any blemish, with any spot. He didn't want them sickly, like the Israelites were starting to do. They were starting to pull out their sickly offerings, the sickly of the group or of the pack, and was giving it to them. And just imagine, he knew that because of the smell. I'm pretty sure he would know that anyway, because his Ruach was dwelling in the nation of Yashareel, but I'm pretty sure he would know for certain if they were actually giving him a good offering by the smell. Because at one point in time, he said, I reject your ascending smoke offerings. I don't even want to smell them. So just imagine what was attached to it. Corruption, sin, and offering the livestock with blemish and spots, and some of them sickly. So that's probably why he didn't want to smell them. They probably stunk to him because it wasn't righteous. And the Most High does not bring himself around anything unrighteous. Which brings me to, very quickly, another point, is how many Negroes in this country are really fooled by Freemasonry still, especially when they are at a time where they are showing way too much of themselves. They are showing way too much of themselves. This whole Pastor Joel Tudman situation was very weird to me. I didn't even know they were even a faith center in Sunrise, Florida. And that's literally 15 minutes from me here. I'm in Fort Lauderdale, but that's like a little bit up northwest. Didn't even know he even existed. But all of a sudden, this Henry Fernandez kicks him out of the church, but no one knew of his sermons until the last sermon when he was talking about food, diet, and health. I haven't heard any of this man's sermons until then. Until when he got kicked out, then everybody went back to why he got kicked out. Because like I said before, and some of the videos I posted online, I said the Negro church is a gossip site. That's all it is. It's media takeout. It's lipstick alley. It's shade room. All it is gossip. And the only way Negroes tune in to worship or to specific Christian leaders is through drama. And I think they know this. I think the CIA knows this. I think those who have created this matrix, this lower level part of it, I think they know that we are set on following drama. We like page six drama. It wasn't his words, his sermons that drew people to the situation. It was the drama that he kicked this man out of his church. He was given a pastoral leadership role. And then months later, he was like, nah. Now, I can see if you are somebody who is a very conservative Christian and your megachurch has a specific image on it, even if it's false, you have an image that you want to uphold, and you have a guy that comes in and he starts talking about bringing in athletes, bringing in panels, bringing in discussions about food, health, and blah, blah, blah. Maybe you don't want that type of programming in your churches, because one or the other is going to be popular. They're going to cease to come to your Sundays, which is going to affect the money, and they're going to come to the guy who was going to be the lead pastor. And they said that the membership picked up over 1,000 came because of him, because he was mixing a gym membership with scripture. That's what he was doing. It wasn't that much of a, it wasn't much Bible teaching. It was mingling one or two verses of the Bible and then bringing out food, health, and diet and how to be healthier. And they even had church services where they were doing like Pilates, stretching, and jumping around and working out. At the same time, they were praising the Most High, which they think they were praising the Most High. This is the type of delusion that's going on in the churches now. I mean, obviously, you know about the church out here, out in Florida, called Glades, and how they were doing Halloween celebrations and theatrics and entertainment. And then now everybody's trying to up each other. And now that he's found Pastor Tudman, now that he has found an avenue of mixing scripture with health and diet, they know it's a billion-dollar industry. So they're thinking, okay, won't we capitalize on that? So what I believe is that they cooked up this, oh, I don't want him part of my church anymore. So now they cut him off. So now everybody's thirsty for more of his sermons, thirsty for more of his word, thirsty for more of his gym sessions. And then they're going to mingle it with the gym, which is House of Athlete, which is out here in Weston. That's ran or co-owned, whatever, by Brandon Marshall, which is a retired Denver Broncos player. He played in Miami. I think his last team was in Miami. But he's the NFL football player whose wife stabbed him in his thigh. Now he talks about, after his divorce, now he's talking about being celibate or abstinent. And all you have to do is look these people up. Pastor Joel Tudman is a Kappa. Brandon Marshall is a Kappa. They're all doing, at this point, doing thumbs in a pyramid, their hands in a pyramid, which there's a telltale sign that they're Prince of Freemasons. It didn't even take me long. I literally did a couple of video research. Now, if I'm on TikTok, you know that the algorithm changes. So if you look at one thing too long, you'll get the same thing repeated over and over again. So when I went down the Pastor Joel Tudman rabbit hole, that's all I kept seeing on my feed. And the girls, the women, Negro women, the ones who are out of shape the most, the ones who need leadership the most, were idolizing him. And the videos that they were using, he was doing thumbs in a pyramid, his hands in a pyramid, right in front of their faces, and still didn't catch it. Even when he was getting rewarded or having good words said about him in the midst of the assembly by Henry Fernandez, he was having his hands in the pyramid. Joel Tudman was. So when Henry Fernandez was having his hand on him and talking to him, this dude was in a bright lime-colored suit, which is in numerology 33. He had a lime-colored suit on with his thumbs in a pyramid, standing in front of him. Now, Henry Hernandez is a small, skinny guy. So Joel Tudman is like a defensive lineman-size type dude. So imagine his big self standing there with his thumbs in a pyramid. It's so obvious. Yet, Negro Christians who claim they have the Holy Spirit, the Ruach HaKodesh, can't see it. The Most High is not raising up anybody Christian. He's raising up people to come out of Christianity. I don't know why Negroes don't see it. Everybody's so comfortable and think they're being blessed because they use the name Jesus. I'm sorry. That name is not making you blessed. Demons can bless. Oh, I had a dream of him. How do you know you had a dream of Jesus? How do you know this? Because visions that the Most High sent are completely different from the dreams and visions that demons send. And people keep forgetting, I used that name and then it worked for me. How do you not know that it was meant to show that it worked for you so you would stay in the religion? Did you ever think about that? Did you ever think all the time that you used Jesus Christ that it worked because the demons wanted you to let it work? They wanted you to have the image of it working so you could stay right there in that religion? I know a brother in the comments talked to me about him seeing certain numbers like 444, 666, 777, 888, and different combinations of numbers that mean things. I said, there's a reason why it does that. Is the reason why the system does that to you when you start to be awakened? Because we all went through it. It wants you to feel that you're on the right track. But the more you notice it, the more it's like a dopamine hit. You start to feel like you're enlightened. That's where most people stay. There's most people who just stay in angel numbers. That's all they know. They be posting angel numbers. Oh, 888 means this today. 999 means this today. And they stay there because it feels good to them. But that's what demons want you to do. They want you to stay where it feels good. So anytime people come to these weak churches or attack these church leaders, it's always, oh, the devil doesn't like the truth. The devil doesn't like that. That's the mindset that these people are in. They truly believe that they are doing something that's right and do not know that demons and higher demons put them in the situation or put them in a mindset to make them feel like what they're doing is right. Why would they ever change from it? So when we all were awakened, most of us who are awakened to numerology went through the same process of seeing numbers overused, like at their cash register, if I'm paying for something, or if I see it on a bus that's passing by. Like, it wants you to take notice so you could stay exactly where you are so you don't ascend past it. That's why the system does this to you. It can't physically restrain you from learning the truth. That's the beauty of what the Most High has created and what the Most High has held back. If they were allowed to have free reign, none of us would be alive today, because they would have easily after 9/11 started turning this whole entire war on us. It's only by the grace and mercy of the Most High that he's extending his grace until that time. But you see how this world is working? They would have free reign to unalive anybody if the Most High was non-existent, if he was not holding back the Antichrist, if he didn't give these demons like Mestima, if you read the Book of Jubilees or you read Jasher or Enoch, the Most High wouldn't have given Mestima over to certain unrighteous and wicked men to work their will. He would have just let him have free reign. If you read the story of Jasher, when the Israelites were in Mizraim and they were coming out of it, Mestima had a big part to play in that. The reason why Pharaoh, after changing his mind, gave chase to the Israelites is because Mestima stirred him up. And Mestima was going to make sure that the Egyptians destroyed the Israelites before they went into the Sea of Reeds. They said that the angels had to restrain him. They had to bind him because he was going to do more than he was supposed to be doing. So just imagine, a lot of these demons, or these real unruly, oppressive demons, are being held back until their time. But people can't see it or understand it. So they go into these type of churches believing that this man is being kicked out of this church for some church drama. And they never tell you what the church drama is. They just want you to wait on his pop-up shop. That's it. Wait on his pop-up shop. So right now he's been doing sermons. He's been doing his little teachings online. But he's been doing them at a gym. And the gym is House of Athlete. Like I said, it was just run by Brandon Marshall, who was on that show Pivot or I Am Athlete. And then somehow they disbanded, which is funny to me because I turn around and I see Ray Lewis on a commercial down here for Hard Rock. And right behind him is Fred Taylor. And Fred Taylor, they went from the I Am Athlete to Pivot. And I looked up I Am Athlete, and its numerology is 33. So I know Ray Lewis is a Freemason. And now I'm seeing Fred Taylor getting commercial spots. He must be close to being a Freemason or a Freemason already. So the guy that they have on there, Ryan Clark, I think he does ESPN. I think you've seen him on there. He's played for the Pittsburgh Steelers, I believe. He is a Kappa. So I know pretty sure he is on his way to being Prince of Freemason. Prince of Freemasonry isn't, if he isn't already. So I'm just sitting back and watching all these NFL players who I used to be friends with and used to be cool with, now wanting the spotlight. Can't just sit still and leave well enough alone and live off their 401ks or live off, just live off the money they have saved. They want that spotlight. Former players and former athletes, they can't walk away from that spotlight. They don't know who they are without that spotlight. Regardless of the fact that Isaac Bruce got up there on his Hall of Fame speech, he got up there and started talking about how we were the children of the book. If you look up his Hall of Fame speech, he goes in great detail. He tries to go in great detail. And he also explains that he had something written out where I knew he was going to talk about us being Israelites, and he's going to say it in a very unique way where it would have been very eloquent to hear. But they took his iPad from off the podium. So they must have saw what he was about to read. So he goes up there and he's like, well, they took, I had something to write out, but they took my iPad. So they removed whatever he was going to say, and he's had to freestyle it. But he made it really clear that we were Hebrews. He made it very clear that we were Israelites. He made it very clear that he was excited for the second Exodus. And after that, you can hear nothing else from him. Now, Ray Lewis's Hall of Fame speech, he got up there and started talking about numerology. Oh, 2 and 5. The reason why I pick 5 and 2, because it's 7. It's the number of completion, the number of God. So he's talking Freemasonry talk. And then sooner or later, like 2 or 3 years after that, I think like literally year before last, his son died. His son died, and now I see him on commercials for Hard Rock with his receding hairline. So people don't see it. People see like, oh, he's supposed to be on TV because he's an entertainer. He's a great entertainer. But people don't see nothing more than that. It's like people who still go to the Potter House with T.D. Jakes, which is where Pastor Joel Tubman came from. Pastor Joel Tubman came from the Potter House. If you come from the Potter House, you know you're close to Prince Sarfrey Masonry or the Order of the Eastern Stars. T.D. Jakes' wife is AKA. His daughter pretty much is not in a sorority, but she has to be close to being an Order of Eastern Star. Because she did that whole Women's Evolve conference, and all she did was have checkerboards everywhere and try to wash it up by saying it was a race that needed to be completed, that we're running a race just so they can bring in the finishing line checkerboard flag. So that was very Masonic. Them falling out, speaking in tongues, it was just a silly show. But Negro women eat that up because they are the ones that are without leadership, without sense. Isn't that saying in 1 Timothy? These are the types that lead away silly women, laden with diverse lusts, ever learning, but never coming to the knowledge of the truth. That's all I argue with on TikTok mostly, is Negro women defending these weak Christian pastors and leaders. And then wonder why they're not married. Wonder why they can't get their relationships to work. Wonder why nothing comes good of them being in those churches. And you know what they do? When they leave Christianity, they go into New Age. They go into Kemet. They're close to going into atheism. And they blame Christianity. They blame the God of the Bible. And they have not known the God of the Bible. It's just a deflection from not taking accountability of the fact that you were fooled. Just like all of us were fooled. It takes an adult to take accountability to the fact that they were fooled. And you allowed yourself to be fooled because you didn't read the book for yourself. And that's what we are doing. We are supposed to be reading the book for ourselves. And the whole thing with Philip Anthony Mitchell, he tells you, don't idolize me, read the book for yourself. And people look at that and like, oh, he's so modest. Oh, he's such a great leader. He doesn't want the fame. He doesn't want the spotlight. That's why he's telling us not to idolize him and to read the book for ourselves. That's a spell in itself. That's like an abuser telling you that I'm going to abuse you if you stay with me longer. I'm going to hurt you if you stay with me longer. And something in the back of your mind wants to see it. That's the spell. Those who without real understanding and common sense, if you are in an abusive relationship or getting ready to go into one and you've known this person's been an abuser and he says to you, I'm going to abuse you if you cross me. If something happens in a situation I don't like, I'm going to abuse you. There's something about you that be like, I want to test it out. I want to see if it's true. I want to see if it's really what they say it is. Before you woke up, you opened yourself to that. I can fix him. I know that he loves me. I know he's not like this with everyone. Trust me, I've heard it all. Because I used to be that guy that they would say that about. And well, he's not like this with me. So you must be doing something wrong because he didn't do this to me. That's the spell, to open yourself up to be abused and manipulated more. It's that false modesty, that false honesty. Like, oh, he's telling me what he might do if I just don't do this. And then when it happens, you'll put the onus on you that you messed up. Trust me, I know how to manipulate it. Even when I didn't even try to, I knew how I could manipulate somebody into believing, into accepting manipulation and abusive behavior. But that's what these church leaders do to you. And then when they put some excitement behind it, some passion behind it, because you have not known passion and excitement, unless it's through toxicity. So a lot of it comes from the fact that you're still fornicating. Then you go to these churches looking to fornicate more spiritually. And so what you're used to in your toxic relationships, you're used to in the church. So you conflate the two. So it's the same thing. What your home life is what your spiritual life is. If you're going to be abused physically, you'll be abused spiritually. And you don't see nothing wrong with it after a while. So that's why mostly women go into these Christian churches just sitting there being abused spiritually. Because they felt like, well, I've already survived the physical part of it. I only know abuse and manipulation from the physical part of it. Now I can just sit in this seat. I can jump, scream, shout, fall on the floor, speak in tongues, do that little shuffle dance, maybe even do a little praise worship, praise break Pilates session, and I wouldn't know that I was being manipulated. I wouldn't know that I was being spiritually abused because it feels good to me that it's not the physical abuse that I've endured. It's not the toxic behavior or toxic abuse that I endured before. That this type of abuse makes me feel good. That's why a lot of Negro women end up in these churches. That's why they end up in these religions. Some of you came into this world and were like, nah, this don't even sound right. It don't even feel right, and left it. But when it comes to us, it's a whole different ballgame. A whole different ballgame. Searching for an identity and can't find it. So many brothers online think they're Moors. Where being Moorish is not a bloodline or a lineage. It's what the Europeans would call black Muslims. And he stayed around mostly North Africa. Which also is where the real Aram, the real Assyrians, the real Syria, and the real Aram and Ashur nations were. Which were descendants of Shem. So they were also in North Africa. And people and black folks think, oh, this is us. This is us. This is who we're supposed to be. And then Noble Drew Ali brought that nonsense, the Moorish Science Temple, into America. Which Noble Drew Ali was a Freemason. He wasn't even 100% Negro. Like I said, people latch on to spiritual abuse because that's all they know. Whatever makes them feel good, they'll latch onto it because they're searching for an identity. If you're in a religion, it's because you're searching for an identity. If you're not in a religion, you're following whatever new age thing is because you're searching for an identity. When you come into this covenant, you no longer have an identity of nation. You no longer have an identity with race or how race is perceived in this world. You are Yah's child. You are his sons and daughters. And we are charged with the duty of being close to the Father. I would feel like people coming to this truth would want to be anxiously finding ways to be closer to the Father. I would think that's your main goal. The only thing that's keeping you from that is because you're searching for identity apart from what Yah created for you. And you're still holding on to what this world wants for you or what you can do in this world and get from this world. Which I get because most of you don't have time to read scriptures like I have time to read scriptures. Some of you have very hectic schedules. You have whole families with children, multiple children. And yes, it could be, you know, stressful at times. But at the end of the day, if you prioritize your time, well, you can serve him and you can free up some free time for yourself and peace for yourself. But if you're trying to mingle sports and watching sports games, fantasy leagues, Call of Duty, online gaming, the bar, happy hour, social media, if you're doing all those things, you're just causing distractions for yourself, and you're wondering why you keep slipping back into sin. Is because you have too many options that's connecting you to your vice. And which I said before, that's why these school shooters don't make no sense to me either. Especially when they say, oh, this kid was idolizing school shooters. Oh, this guy was idolizing school shooters. This person here was idolizing. They keep saying the same thing. How? Everybody's pretty much connected. A lawyer is pretty much connected to somebody who is emo. They are connected by the same traditions. They're connected by the same devices. They're connected by the same matrix. It regardless that their lives look completely opposite or different from each other, they are connected. They are following the lusts of their flesh. Following the lusts of your flesh, following your vices, you're going to eventually be connected to Satan. It's so many branches that need to be there's so many branches that need to be connected to this one big tree. That's why Satan uses the internet. That's why he uses these apps. That's why he uses Wi-Fi. That's his Ruach HaKodesh, to connect to every single person whose life is completely different from each other on paper. But if you scale it all back, they are connected through the lusts of their flesh and their vices. There is a cokehead alcoholic lawyer, just like there is a cokehead alcoholic doctor, and just like it's a real cokehead alcoholic that's on the street. They are all connected through vice. Do you understand what I'm saying? You are all connected through a vice. And that connection leads you all the way back eventually over time, especially when they control the same people who are in the same universities, they go to the same fraternal organizations, they follow the same doctrine. They're all connected to the branch, and they want you connected with them. So by connecting to them, y'all all flow into the Antichrist. So being disconnected from this system, you no longer are connected to any branch of this system through vice, through foolishness, through folly, or through stumbling block. You sever that connection as soon as you get into these commandments, as soon as you get into doing these offerings, as soon as you're doing these feast days. You literally are saving your life by doing what the Most High wants you to do and what pleases Him. That's how you sever yourself. Now, people call what we do legalistic and have no idea what that term even means. Legalism, or what they're doing is legalism. And you know what's funny? No one ever pushed up on the Jews and told them what they were doing was legalism, because people were too scared to open their mouths against them. Because people believe they had some magical power that as soon as you were labeled an anti-Semite, that you was going to lose your job. And that's only because they seen it happen over and over again in media, through ritual, through psyop, or what have you, that you couldn't talk about them. But y'all remember that song that Michael Jackson had? They don't care about us. And what he said, they tried to barbecue him and ain't nothing happened. Because why? They needed money from him. They couldn't really silence Michael Jackson, because he was at the time the biggest pop star, the biggest. The money he made for that record company, the money that he made going city to city touring, the money that he made in merchandise, they couldn't cut him down quickly. They could do it over time, but they couldn't cut him down quickly. So people believe that if you said this word and you got labeled an anti-Semite, that you were going to lose your job. So people don't say nothing against them. But as soon as the Israelites was like, hey, you might want to return back to the law, statutes, and commandments, you might want to return back to what Moshe said, then it was, oh, you guys are talking about legalism, that you need to be working for the Most High in order to be saved. So I looked up the term biblical legalism. It's not even in the Bible, but it was clearly defined in the 17th century by Edward Fisher in his 1645 book, The Marrow of Modern Divinity, where he used legalism to describe someone who bases their justification on the law, While the Bible doesn't use this specific term, the idea of legalism or salvation by works is evident throughout both the Old and New Testaments, particularly seen in the self-righteousness of the Pharisees and scribes and Sadducees in Yahushua's time. Now, isn't it funny that soon as we went into captivity in 1619, that all of these denominations of Christianity started to popping up and all these different doctrines of theologians started to pop up with it. From the 17th century to the 18th century, look up of how many denominations of Christianity popped up. The Baptists popped up, Mormonism popped up, Seventh-day Adventists popped up, Jehovah Witnesses popped up, Baptist religion popped up, Pentecost popped up. That was all within 100 years or even less of each other. And the European has created these doctrines. We didn't create these doctrines. So it's almost like they knew exactly when the Israelites were going into captivity so they could pervert and create different doctrines, thinking forward that if they trapped the children of Yisrael in these denominations, in these doctrines, that they would defend it, they would fight for it, they would die for it, and they would not expose it for what it is. So we had to start it early. As soon as we went into captivity, that's when these denominations and these doctrines started to pop up. Now, a lot of us can't break free from it. Only a remnant was called. The Most High is not going to waste time to keep trying to correct you, overcorrect you, correct you, overcorrect you. He said in scripture, like, whatever I planted, if it does not come up in his season, it ain't my problem. I'll find that verse and read it to you another time. But he says, what I have planted, if it does not come up in season, then it ain't my problem. Because I planted it before time and I gave them ample time to turn from their sin and repent and seek me. So when it comes to biblical legalism and being justified by the law, that's why they bring in Paul and say, oh, you can't be justified by this, by the law. And Paul is a Sadducee, was running with the Sadducees and the Pharisees. So he would know that he was taking the law serious, but he was doing the law without grace, mercy, and love for Yah. He was doing the law based on the traditions and the commandments and the appointing of these commandments through men. That's what he was doing. I mean, I follow the law. It doesn't mean I love America. Like, I don't run a stop sign. I follow the stops. I follow traffic laws, but I don't follow it because I love America. That's what being a Pharisee and Sadducee was doing. They were just following it because they knew I wasn't going to go to jail. I'm just following this law because I don't want to go to hell. That's how they were seeing it. But the Most High wanted us to search his law, search his statutes and his commandments to do them based on what he has created for us to live so that we would love him. That's why in Matthew 5, verse 19, it says, whosoever therefore shall break one of these least commandments and shall teach men so, he shall be called the least in the kingdom. The least in the kingdom of heaven. But whosoever shall do and teach them, the same shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. Now, I ain't trying to be the least in the kingdom of heaven, because the least looks like it'd be close to being kicked out of heaven. And that's what these churches do. These churches teach you not to obey the law, statutes, commandments. So going back to Pastor Joel Tudman, he was talking about in his little panel discussion of Guardians of the Temple series, which is hilarious to me because I just looked up the phrase Guardians of the Temple and it's a Masonic thing of the pillars of Boaz, whatever they believe in. This thing with, Boaz and Jason. So he hit y'all with this Eat Clean, Live Strong, Guardians of the Temple panel discussion. And it was named after Freemasonry. But he was going into Leviticus 11, which is the dietary laws. And he didn't want to go into all of it. He went into what we know we shouldn't eat. Like, you can't eat, you know, if it's in this, if it's in the water, it can't have. I was like, you can have, if it has scales, you can eat it, so forth. But he didn't say you couldn't eat shellfish. He didn't say you couldn't eat lobster. He didn't say you couldn't eat shrimp. He didn't say you couldn't eat crab. He didn't go into that. He just said, well, I didn't want to go into it. And then he had a couple of verses from it. The most obvious verses, the things you know you couldn't eat, like the bald eagle. Like you couldn't eat eagle. You couldn't eat certain birds. And he knew that Negroes didn't suffer from eating eagle or eating unclean birds. He didn't want to touch pork. He didn't want to touch swine or bacon. He didn't want to touch that, which is the reason why Negroes in this country got heart disease, high blood pressure, and diabetes. So instead of trying to save his people and being a somewhat child of God, he didn't want to go into what was really hurting the Negro community. So he went to like Leviticus 11 down to 9, and then that's where he stopped, I think. But he didn't go into all of it. He didn't go into the important nutrition aspects of that. And the reason why Christians don't do that, because if you validate what they say in Leviticus, you would have to validate the Israelites. And the more you change, the more you turn your parishioners into the laws, they eventually will find out who they are. So that's why they had to really sidestep a lot of the certain things that were in the book. And Matthew 5, verse 20 says, "For I say unto you, that except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, ye shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven." How can we exceed the righteousness of Pharisees, scribes, and Sadducees? How? By doing these laws, statutes, commandments, not for ourselves, not to impose them upon men, but do them because we love Yah. Like it says, if you love me, guard my commandments, my statutes, my ordinances. They weren't, the Pharisees and the scribes and Sadducees weren't doing it out of their love for Yah. They were self-righteous. They were doing them because they like, okay, I just need to do them, which puts me separate from you and think I'm supposed to be exalted and honored because I do something that you can't do or are struggling with doing. So that's the reason why I do it. I do it to be shown that I'm better than you. That's why if you read one of the prayers that Yahushua said never to pray like, he was like, oh, I'm praying to you because I'm not like the wicked man. I'm not like this guy. I'm not like this person who does all these things against you. I'm better than he. So I hear my prayer. And that's what Yahushua said, do not pray like this man. And he was comparing this man to a man that didn't know how to pray, didn't know how to repent yet. And he said, I will listen to him. I won't listen to a man that comes in and say, well, I'm not like the celebrities. I have done this, 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 and this. I am not like these other people. And that's what most of these Christian pastors are. They're Pharisees, Sadducees, and scribes. They're not doing it out of the love for Yah. They're doing it out of love for their fraternal order, which if they do good in fooling you, they are exalted. They are raised up in a degree, an extra degree off your ignorance. And when you are raised up in an extra degree, I'm pretty sure they all want to be 33rd degree Freemasons because that's opening up certain doors for you and your family to put you in a bigger house, even a private jet, and things you don't have to worry about because you're one of them. They're going to take care of their own. That's why all these systems are equating or being merged into one because they all have like interests, which is more for me, less for you. And I'll do whatever it takes to do it. I do whatever it takes to get it. So I'm going to enjoy my Pesach week. So it won't be any episodes on Thursday or maybe not even the following Sunday, because I'm going to enjoy my Pesach. And those who are following along, I hope you are enjoying yours too. I hope you are finding out different things that you didn't do perfectly before and that you get to do them now. And, you know, whatever that may look like to you, I hope you guys are having a marvelous time doing something that most people are not doing or never have knowledge or understanding to do. And that means like the calendar, where the real location is, and doing your best to seek Yah 10 times more after you have found him. I'll see y'all next time, or see y'all after the Pesach week.